Hi, my name is Kirk Kinder, and this is Saving Yourself from Wall Street, the podcast for people who want to avoid Wall Street's sales tactics, high cost, and conflicted advice so they can take control of their financial life. So let's get to it. In today's episode of the Saving Yourself from Wall Street podcast, we're going to examine some big changes that Congress is planning to make to the retirement landscape and how this is going to impact you. And we'll finish by looking at an organization that holds itself out as a champion for retirees, but might actually be working against retirees for financial gain. So first, as I mentioned, Congress is looking to make some big changes to the retirement landscape. And when it comes to legislation, I've got two rules. One, if both sides of the aisle are overwhelmingly backing a piece of legislation, it's usually bad for the American people. Second, if they create a cute name for the legislation, then the reality is it does probably the opposite of what the name implies. You guys may or may not agree with me on this, but a perfect example of that is the Patriot Act. There's really nothing patriotic about it. In fact, I think it stripped Americans' rights like you wouldn't believe. So right now, both sides of the aisle seem to be pushing through the SECURE Act. SECURE. It sounds okay, right? Who doesn't want to be secure? Well, the SECURE stands for Setting Every Community Up for Retirement Enhancement Act of 2019. So this bill has just recently cleared the House committee and is expected to pass through the Senate committee with very little issue. Now, as the name implies, this is supposed to be an enhancement to the retirement landscape, and in many ways it is. However, I think there's something more devious being pulled over on the American people here. So first, I do want to start off with what are the good parts of the projected bill, because there are some good things here to help retirees. So the first thing is you can now contribute to an IRA after you reach age 70 and a half. Now, if you might remember, 70 and a half is a magical number for retirement because starting April 1st of the year after you reach 70 and a half, you have to start pulling from your IRAs, 401ks, or retirement plans. It's called the required minimum distribution. So once you hit that magical age of 70 and a half, the government no longer allows you to contribute to your IRA. I guess they figured if you have to pull out from it, there's no reason to put money in. But we still have 19% of the people ages 70 to 74 still in the workforce. So there's a good number. Almost 20% of people 70 to 74 are still working. So shouldn't they, by right, have the opportunity to save part of their earnings into a retirement plan? So another little enhancement is, now, instead of having to take your money out, that required minimum distribution, by April 1st of the year after you turn 70 and a half, the SECURE Act changes the RMD to age 72. So this delays when people are required to take money from their retirement accounts. So, you know, it could be good for a lot of people. It's not that big of a difference. You know, you're really talking a year and a half, maybe 2 years. But it does give you a couple more years to do Roth conversions, which I think is essential for retirees to think about doing. So I guess that's good. It is an enhancement. At the very least, it will simplify it because so many people aren't sure. Okay, 70 and a half, do I have to take it out by 70 and a half? Does it have to be by the year end? Does it have to be by April 1st? What's going on? So at least saying 72 makes it pretty easy. Some other little enhancements. It's going to increase tax credits to companies that start 401k or retirement plans. Now, this is good. It's going to entice more small businesses to create plans, which is always good for employees to have the option to save for retirement. So that's a positive. Another big positive regarding small business retirement plans is the Congress is going to allow people to create a multiple or participate in a multiple employer plan or a MEP, MEP. What's a MEP? Well, this allows small businesses to group together to get better pricing on 401k plans. Right now, if you're a small business, you're not going to get very good pricing on your 401k plans. I find that small business 401ks are just riddled with fees. And if you happen to be a small business owner and you think that might be your situation, you're not sure what your fees are, let me know. I can show you. We have a very low-cost 401k platform for small businesses. Okay, my pitch is over. Let me get back to what the MEP is. So the MEP allows them to join together to get better pricing. So the only thing that a lot of people worry about with these MEPs is there's a lot of compliance rules associated with 401k plans. So if one of the employers is kind of a dirtbag and isn't making contributions on time or playing by the rules, it could hurt the other companies. But Congress is always looking at ways to kind of protect the companies that are playing by the rules. So this is good. This is going to allow a lot more small businesses to offer 401k plans. Another thing they did with the 401k plan for the individuals is they're going to allow people to take loans on their 401k plans at zero interest rates for a new birth or adoption. So if you're going to have a baby or if you're going to adopt a child, they're going to allow you to take out a 401k and not pay any interest on it. Usually when you take out a 401k loan, you're going to have to pay a certain interest rate back when you pay back your 401k. These are going to be at 0%. So that's a positive. These are things that are good. And then the final thing I'll point out that's a positive is, and it really isn't pertaining to retirement plans so much, but college savings, the 529 plan is now going to be authorized for apprenticeship programs. So if you have a child that wants to become an electrician or a plumber or something along those lines, they'll be able to take money from a 529 to pay for that vocational training. And it's also going to allow for some homeschooling expenses. So if you're a parent who's homeschooling your child, you're going to be able to use the 529 to pay for some of the expenses that you incur. So again, that's all good. We're happy about that stuff. But I think the good pales in comparison to the bad of this plan. So here's the bad part. The SECURE Act is going to set a requirement where all non-spouse beneficiaries to distribute inherited IRAs in 10 years. Now, this won't affect you if you leave your IRA to a spouse. It's just going to be anybody who's not a spouse. So this could be your child, a parent, a grandchild, anything like that, or just a friend. Right now, non-spouse beneficiaries can distribute an IRA, an inherited IRA, over their lifetime. So let's say you pass away and you leave your IRA to your 40-year-old daughter. Your daughter would be able to take the required distributions out over the rest of her life. This would allow her to get tax deferral growth for, say, 40 or 50 years. So she's 40 for the next 40 or 50 years until she dies. She can get tax deferred growth. Now, the SECURE Act is going to require that she withdraw that out over the first 10 years after inheriting it. And what makes this even worse is that many people who inherit IRAs in their 40s and 50s, they're in their prime earning years. They're at the top of their professions usually. So they're already in a higher tax bracket than probably you would be if you give your IRA to your child. So most retirees are in a lower tax bracket. So if they pass away and leave their IRA to their child's in a higher tax bracket already. And then having to pull out the IRA over a 10-year period is going to probably create some sizable withdrawals, which is going to push them in the higher tax brackets. Whereas if they can do it over a 40 or 50-year period, the withdrawals aren't as great and it won't push them as much into a higher bracket. This is even worse if you had a plan to leave your IRA to a grandchild. So if you leave it to a grandchild who's maybe in their early 20s, well, they might have 60 or 70 years of tax-deferred growth. Now they have to take it out over 10 years. So, I mean, that's just going to have an enormous impact on people. And this is even worse if you happen to be using a Roth IRA. So a Roth IRA, while you are alive, if it's your Roth IRA, there is absolutely no requirement for you to take money from your IRA, from your Roth IRA. You can leave it in there until the day you die. However, once your beneficiaries inherit the IRA, they have to take required minimum distributions over their lifetime. So they don't get exempt from that. So here again, this new law, if it becomes law, is going to require that your beneficiaries take the Roth IRA out over a 10-year period. So going back to our example, if you leave it to a child, that child might have 40 or 50 years of tax-free growth ahead of them. And a grandchild is looking at 60 or 70 years. So this has an enormous, enormous impact on middle-income folks. And this isn't something that's really going to hurt the wealthy at all, because most wealthy folks are limited in the amount that they can put into a 401k or IRA, just like we are. They can't put more into these vehicles than us. So the IRAs and 401k plans for wealthy people, it's a minuscule amount of their net worth. But for a middle-income working person, the IRA or 401k plan could be a sizable portion of their net worth, maybe outside of their house. So this is a huge wealth-building tool for middle-income families that the government is basically going to shut down. And why are they going to do it? Well, I think this is nothing more than a tax grab. So they're giving us some benefits, some enhancements that are good, but it's a backdoor way to get more tax revenues. Not only does the government end up getting tax revenues sooner with this SECURE Act, but it can push working people up into a much higher tax bracket, costing you more money and giving the government more cash. So what I'm recommending for everybody out there is that you call your congressperson or your senator and you request that he or she does not vote for the SECURE Act. I don't care if it comes out of both committees with unanimous support. This is just not a good idea for the working family. If the government wants to try to find some backdoor way to get extra revenues, maybe they should first look at cutting expenses a little bit. I think that would be the first place to look. There's so much waste in the government. That's the first place. If they go through their budget line by line and they cut and they still need some more, we can look at some ways to get it. But I think this is just an abomination, in my opinion. That's just me. Okay, so it's a little bit soapboxy there, but I think it's something you really need to think about. And I do highly recommend you contact your legislation, your representatives and senators, and strongly recommend that they do not support this act. Okay, next topic. As I mentioned, we're going to look a little bit at an organization that claims to be a champion for retirees, but I think what they really do is they look to make sure that they keep the revenue streams going. So as we always mention, one of our goals here at Saving Yourself from Wall Street is to help you navigate the treacherous waters of personal finance. And I'm not just talking about the actual planning topics of how to invest or when to take Social Security. We want to make sure that you're getting objective advice. Becoming prey to Wall Street is a surefire way to waste thousands of your dollars. So right now, I'm taking aim at an entity that isn't a big Wall Street bank. In fact, it's probably going to surprise you a little bit. I'm taking aim at AARP. AARP is seen as a champion for the retired person in America. They fight for retirees. Or so they want you to think. I feel like AARP is really nothing more than an arm for medical insurance. I've always felt this way. The fight retirees is just a ruse to ensure the medical insurance kickbacks just keep rolling in for AARP. So I was just reading an article on how AARP filed a brief recently at the federal appeals court to defend Obamacare so it maintains its constitutional protection. Now, I'm not going to get into whether you think we need Obamacare or whether Obamacare is good or bad. What I'm looking at is AARP's intentions here. Why would they file a brief stating millions of Americans could lose their coverage if Obamacare loses its constitutional protection? So what we have to do is go back to when Obamacare was implemented. So the government at that time took $716 billion out of Medicare to pay for the expansion of healthcare coverage through Obamacare. Despite this huge drain on the very system retirees depend on, AARP was lobbying for its passage. So why would they do that? Why would the champion of retirees lobby for anything that would take $716 billion out of Medicare? Well, it appears that AARP stood to make close to $1 billion from the passage of Obamacare. The reason is AARP, like I've said at the outset, is really a private medical health insurer, not a consumer advocate. Before the passage of Obamacare in 2012, AARP made over $450 million in royalties from its health insurance partnerships. This was over 52% of their overall revenue. Their membership revenue was only $266 million. You see, AARP sells Medigap policies. These are policies that step in to pay for medical expenses that Medicare doesn't pay. So AARP undertook two actions to keep their health insurance premiums rolling. One, they lobbied against Medicare reforms that were part of the Obamacare plans or Obamacare bill. So there was bipartisan support that wanted to add catastrophic coverage to Medicare directly, which was projected to save every retiree in America about $415 per year. So AARP worked to squash that so they could continue to collect their 4.95% royalty fee on Medigap plans. So rather than having a feature put straight into Medicare, they fought that to ensure that Medigap would be filling that role, and it cost retirees. The second way that they made money on this is the cuts to Medicare in the Obamacare law occurred mostly to the Medicare Advantage plans that many seniors used and loved. So Medicare Advantage is a private insurance plan that is used in lieu of the traditional Medicare Parts A and B. So a retiree could get on Medicare A and B, or they could get on a Medicare Advantage plan, which is completely private. Now, these cuts to the Medicare Advantage plan ensured that many retirees would be forced back to the traditional Medicare plans, Plan A and B, and then would have to buy a Medigap policy, which conveniently AARP sells and gets a 4.95% royalty kickback on. Interesting, isn't it? Further, AARP got themselves exempted from some key Obamacare provisions, such as requiring insurers to take all people, regardless of pre-existing conditions. That's interesting. So that means AARP's Medigap policies wouldn't have to do that. Very interesting. And AARP Medigap plans are allowed to have twice the administrative cost that other insurers are allowed to have under Obamacare. This is under the medical loss ratio regulations. So, why is that? Well, it's because AARP has got to protect that 4.95% royalty. What's interesting is really the insurance companies don't have a huge profit margin. They might make a lot of money, but their profit margin is really only 5 or 6%. But the AARP plans aren't limited to the Obamacare restrictions. So that ensures that AARP can get that 4.95% royalty. The other exemption is they're exempt from the $500,000 salary cap on industry executive compensation that other insurers have to reckon with. And it's interesting because what most people probably don't realize is that the top AARP executives earn over $1 million a year. Huh. Wow. Jeez. This is interesting, isn't it? So, did they really profit from the changes? So these are projections that were made back in 2012 when everything was put in there. Well, as I stated earlier, the royalties from health insurance before Obamacare was $415 million. And the last figures I was able to pull up were for 2017. And the royalties for the Medigap policies, AARP, are now making over $900 million. So they basically increased it by $485 million. That's not too shabby, is it? It's a nice little boost. Not too bad. Now, I know you probably love your AARP card for the discounts you get. I see my parents whip that card out all the time to get some stuff. But I strongly recommend you reconsider your membership to the organization. I really do. I just don't think their interests are really aligned with yours, in my opinion. You can get those membership discounts with a AAA membership. If you're a veteran, there's all kinds of opportunities for veterans to get those benefits. And there's a lot of other avenues to get these discounts. That's the biggest thing I think most people like. Some people say, I like the magazine too. Well, okay, great. Go online, find the articles. But the other thing I would say is when you're looking at your Medigap policy, don't assume you're getting a great deal because the name AARP is on that plan or that it's AARP endorsed. The salesperson often push those plans and they get a little extra commission. So they get a little extra to sell those AARP plans. So you might not be getting truly objective advice here from your Medicare salesperson. Talk to a truly independent Medigap salesperson. Also require that they show you two or three plans. Don't just let them pick what they think is the best plan for you. Get two or three plans. Once they pick those two or three plans, make sure you ask those salespeople what they're going to put in their pockets for each of these policies. So if you find out that the one that they're strongly recommending, that they're going to get more money in their pocket, you need to think about that. If they're only recommending the one that pays them the most, then you might want to find a different salesperson. So that's the show for this week. Kind of going after people here. I'm not really a big fan of the SECURE Act. I'd like you to lobby against it. And then I'm kind of trying to expose my beliefs on AARP. I'm not a big fan of that organization. And I'm not going to join when I get to that magic age, which is coming up faster than I'd like. But again, if you have any questions, have any comments, please let me know. Would love to chat with you if you have some time. Well, that's it for this episode of the Saving Yourself from Wall Street podcast. I appreciate you stopping in. As always, you can find our podcast along with other articles and videos at savingyourselffromwallstreet.com. And now, the lawyers say hi.
Saving Yourself from Wall Street is hosted by Kirk Kinder. Kirk Kinder is the owner of Picket Fence Financial, a fee-only financial planning firm. Picket Fence Financial is regulated by the states of Maryland and Florida in accordance and in compliance with securities laws and regulations. Picket Fence Financial does not render or offer to render personalized financial or tax advice through the Saving Yourself from Wall Street podcast. The information provided is for informational purposes only and does not constitute financial, tax, investment, or legal advice.